The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine, and today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Well, we are going to return now to the August 2020 edition. You believe that? It's August 2020. Edition of Our State magazine celebrating North Carolina. Theme this month has been cheese, although I'm not sure that's what we're going to be talking about today as I read the two articles right in the middle of the magazine after the photo essay, which was all about cheese last week. This article says its title is A Porch with a Past, and it has a wonderful covered porch here because this one leads out onto a nice green lawn and then it drops right off into a lake. And you can see the other side of the lake, not that far away, and I get the feeling this might be in a little cove, so it must be a wonderful view from that porch. Great place to be on a warm summer day. Caption on this photo says, a southern porch is for storytelling, and sometimes when it overlooks a historic landmark like Lake Tuxaway, it is the story. Every porch has a history, a tale told through its architecture and owners. In Transylvania County, one special porch has seen more than a century of change, its story forever tied to the creation, ruination, and rebirth of Lake Tuxaway, written by Susan Stafford Kelly. John L. Nichols III would give anything to know the whole truth about this porch. His porch, wide and unscreened, its floorboards painted a light gray. On his porch, a coffee table big enough for six pairs of feet, hoisted from two wicker couches, is laden with boxes containing documents, postcards, and photographs from Lake Tuxaway's history. But no deed or drawing attesting to the house's original build date exists. Nothing but an interior board etched with the date 1896. Well, that makes sense. The Tuxaway Company was formed by Pittsburgh businessmen in 1895, eventually encompassing 30,000 acres clear over to Cashiers, as well as what would become Lake Tuxaway. When the man-made lake, with its earthen dam, filled up in 1903. Nichols believes that the house he and his family live in served as an office and a place to stay for Tuxaway Company officials and the guests who, they hoped, would be inspired to buy lots after experiencing the stunning view from the porch. From its vantage point on a peninsula, the entire east-west border of Lake Tuxaway and surrounding mountains are visible. Never mind the peaceful sound of water lapping on the stone seawall and other barriers that stretch around nearly every finger and cove of the 640-acre lake with its 14-mile shore and 60-foot depth. Vanderbilts, Fords, Rockefellers, Dukes, and Thomas Edison flocked to the Tuxaway Inn, a luxurious boomerang-shaped hotel erected a few hundred feet from his porch. The inn offered a splendid social life as well as boating, swimming, and shooting. Evenings, an orchestra played on a little island that guests reached by bridge. Then on August 13, 1916, the dam broke beneath torrential rains, releasing 5 billion gallons of water. Famously, fortunately, the only casualty of the flood was a blind mule. And the lake itself, in mere hours, what had been a playground for the rich and famous became a mud pit. Visitors, needless to say, vanished along with the lake. For 44 years, Lake Toxaway was forgotten. The stately, abandoned Toxaway Inn, its dining room tables still set with linens, was torn down in 1947 to salvage its valuable wood and other materials. Across the way, though, the magnificent porch and its house remained, overlooking a desolate landscape and a remnant rivulet of the Toxaway River. The Jennings family from Pennsylvania, who owned the house, created a life estate of it, allowing local folks to live there. One was Tolvin Miller, a former carpenter and handyman at the Toxaway Inn, who moved his family into the house and onto that porch while he served as caretaker of the property. Then in 1960, John Nichols' grandfather, Reginald Heinich of Columbia, South Carolina, bought the acreage around the lake with Darnell Boyd and other investors. They cleared the lake bed and rebuilt the dam, and sure enough, the water rose to its original level. Nichols' parents moved to Lake Toxaway in 1968, taking up residence in the attic of a home built just a year before the flood, and that today is the Greystone Inn. Nichols was born in 1969, and he spent his childhood on the lake, working jobs at the Greystone, then at the marina. In 1972, Nichols' parents purchased the house from the Jennings family. Nichols bought his sister's share of the property in 2015. 2 years later, he and his family left Charlotte to live permanently at Lake Toxaway. And who can blame him? The four-bedroom house with its cedar-shake siding, 12-foot cilings, and original wavy-paned windows is beautiful. Still, it's no mansion like the many modern lakeside estates occupied by executives of Coca-Cola, Home Depot, and Marriott. But oh, the porch, where beneath high ceilings and deep overhangs most of the living clearly happens. To one side of the center steps leading to the porch, a row of rocking chairs and a joggling board overlook the tree-shaded slope to the water. On the other, armchairs and those wicker couches large enough to sleep at least two. Down the side, near the original stone chimney, there's ample room for a fancy grill, a bar, and other entertaining accoutrements. Only the third side of the porch has been renovated before Nichols' time to enclose a portion as a small den and to screen a section where, nowadays, the Nicholases eat meals outside. Nearby, the family keeps a pet flying squirrel whose name, Rocky, will strike a chord for anyone of a certain Saturday morning cartoon era. Evidence of the three Nichols children, ages 10, 13, and 14, is everywhere on the porch and the shore, in the damp towels dropped on the grass and the fresh rolled ones on a wrought iron shelf beside the big old screened slap-in-the-middle front door, in the mallards they're raising, in Charlotte, the Weimaraner, sprawled on the floor that is cool, in the treehouse just down from the porch, built crow's nest style around the trunk and constructed with locust posts, a hard, impervious to rot wood found on docks all around the lake. The family spent one chilly winter on the lake before realizing that their 1896 summertime cottage wasn't exactly designed for cold weather. They re-insulated the house, and now they stay there year-round, comfortably. Does the lake ever freeze? Oh, yeah, Nichols says. We've thrown golf balls from the porch, and they bounce all the way across the lake. A heron glides past. Sunlight glints off the water. I think this porch and the house was a model for the Toxaway Inn, Nichols says. Some tongue-and-groove ceilings are the same cedar shakes, same wooden decking. The amateur documentary filmmaker who commutes to Charlotte and his commercial real estate business sifts through a collection of photographs. Here's a shot from 1971 when, of course, the porch was outfitted with the decades familiar aluminum and webbing lawn chairs, a bentwood style rocker, and bouncing metal armchairs. Here's a panoramic photograph, long assumed to have been taken from the porch, that's also housed in the Library of Congress, and two black and white pictures of a desolate landscape taken after August 1916, bearing tragic handwritten captions, when the dam went out, and same thing. But this porch's history has a happy ending. When caretaker Talvin Miller's elderly granddaughters stepped back onto the porch of the house where they'd lived all those years, both began sobbing. Crying and crying, Nichols says. In all their time on this porch, the sisters had looked at nothing but the scrub growth overtaking an empty lake bed. Now they looked out and saw the real thing, Lake Toxaway. Their tears were of wonder and joy. Nor was the happiness only theirs when the pair identified landmarks, a boathouse, a rock gazebo on a sepia panoramic. Nichols knew for certain that the historic photograph had been taken from the porch he was standing on. Nichols is making a documentary about Lake Toxaway, but he hasn't yet to complete it because the story isn't over, he says. Indeed, recently members of the historic Toxaway Foundation gathered on the porch. Its gracious depth and wraparound length easily held the 150 guests as they leaned against columns and gazed beyond its railing to watch the sun set over Toxaway Mountain, behind which is mostly state or national parkland. They sipped and chatted and stood on the same porch where once decisions were made and deals were brokered, where folks have long sipped and chatted and watched the play of light across placid or waving water beneath bare rock and tree-covered mountain faces. Just a year shy of its 125th birthday, this porch has overseen a lake filled and then spilled and refilled like dreams themselves. Relax. This is a porch with a lot of living yet to do and a lot of history to make. You're listening to our State Magazine on the North Carolina Reading Service. Questions and comments can be addressed to 919-781-1973. And now, Southern Rocker. Finding the right chair for the front porch is an essential part of living the good life in North Carolina, but it takes time, patience, and maybe a failure or two. Written by Scott Huler. I first learned that a rocking chair has a soul when I went looking for one. It was not long after I bought my home in Raleigh. The house had a small front porch, just big enough for a chair and a little table. A big box store provided what you'd call a Carolina slat rocker, wood with square rather than round spindles, and wooden slats for the seat and back. It had nice wide armrests that turned out to be almost, but not quite, big enough to comfortably support a beverage, similar to the ones you see on the front porches of chain restaurants. I brought it home, primed it, painted it, and waited for it to dry. On the first pleasantly warm evening, I went out to the porch, drink in hand, and settled in. And the rocker practically flung me back out. I happened to save the gin and tonic, but you may call that foreshadowing. The chair was poorly balanced, leaning forward just a bit too much. To sit comfortably, you had to push back a little with your legs, which meant that instead of relaxation, the rocker caused tension. Yes, you could place your drink on its armrest, but the minute you tried to turn a page or adjust a cushion or, God forbid, rock, it was goodbye drink. I don't give up easily, though. I sat in that chair and spilled stuff. I tried to read, my calves getting tired, as I hunched over my book like someone in a Rembrandt painting. As God is my witness, I played banjo in that rocking chair. I did what I could, but the chair defeated me. Still, that rocker was lovely to look at, painted a forest green to match the shutters. It sat on my porch aspirationally at least 5 years, maybe 10. But as rain seeped in, the chair became wobbly. So with little reward, I was unwilling to maintain it. And I awoke one morning, finally, to pieces of a chair. The rocker and I parted ways. This was not my first rocking chair fail. I spent much of my childhood facing down a rocker that sat in the den of my family's brick house in suburban Cleveland. It had a broken back spindle that bedeviled me. Attached to the cracked socket at the top, the spindle would usually spring away from the dowel that stuck down from the cresting rail. When the spindle wasn't wobbling back and forth, it was poorly glued, or duct taped, or both, to the dowel, lending no support, but at least rendering its malfunctioning a little less obvious. The broken spindle represented a moment, I was told many times from my toddlerhood. My mother, sitting in the chair, had grabbed me for one of those rocking chair hugs. I wriggled and resisted, refusing to cooperate. But for my mom, it was hug or bust, so bust it was, and she grappled with me until the spindle broke. My mom blamed toddler me. I cast no blame, but from then on, I avoided that chair. Looking back on it now, I think the poor rocker never had a chance. Once you're paying attention to it, once you're thinking about how it works, or even whether it's working, a rocking chair's heart is broken. The entire experience should be unconscious. You should be rocking in a rocking chair without even knowing it. Just as a rocking chair should not throw you out, nobody should wrestle you into a rocking chair. You find yourself in a rocking chair. Because a rocking chair isn't merely a piece of furniture, a rocking chair represents a contract. Between chair and person, between seat and seated, the rocking chair is a way of saying, let's be here now, for this moment. Or maybe not exactly here, here-ish. We're not pushing, we're not pulling, we're just going back and forth a bit, and we're not thinking much about it. A rocking chair, in fact, is even more a contract. It's a statement of beliefs about the purpose of a chair, about the structure of a day. A rocking chair is a meditation on the nature of sitting down. One of the things rocking chairs are not, though, is old. Evidently invented in the northeastern United States, the first rocking chair was most likely just a regular chair with runners, the curved parts nailed to the legs. Manessa Cutler, a preacher who was working to settle the Northwest Territory, visited Ben Franklin in Philadelphia in 1787, and in his journal, Cutler remarked on Franklin showing him his great armed chair with rockers. Probably the first known mention of the design came a little earlier in 1774 in a receipt written by a Philadelphia furniture maker for bottoming a rocking chair, which means that even by then, somebody's rocking chair was old enough to need a new seat. Rocking appears to have upset British writer Harriet Martineau, who, in her 1838 retrospect of Western travel, described upstate New York where the disagreeable practice of rocking in the chair is seen in its excess. In the inn parlor are three or four rocking chairs in which sit ladies who are vibrating in different directions and at various velocities, so as to try the head of a stranger almost as severely as the tobacco chewer his stomach. How this lazy and ungraceful indulgence ever came general, I cannot imagine, but the nation seems so wedded to it that I see little chance of it being forsaken. That's the nation, mind you, but just the same, there are two surprising things here. First, the rocking chair is much newer than one would expect. Although the rocking cradle was found in the ruins left by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius, it took mankind almost two millennia to get from the cradle to the chair, a bit dispiriting. Second, and perhaps more dispiriting for Southerners, is that the rocker is yet another thing that we think of as ours, but actually came from, well, not around here. Yet we may draw comfort from what our snooty British travelers, looking down their noses, call this lazy and ungraceful indulgence. Perhaps as other parts of the country began to perceive themselves as more sophisticated than the South, they too started to look down on the practice of rocking. But the South has always been proud of its indulgences. We have been rocking for this duration. Over time, the rocker has become as associated with the South as sweet tea and the front porch. Tennessee Ernie Ford is credited with the old chestnut, nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Although I and others deeply believe that we have heard this expression uttered by Sheriff Taylor, even if, despite assiduous research, no Mayberry-based evidence has come to light. The famous chair that soothed President Kennedy's back was not merely a Southern rocker, but a Carolina rocker, a caneback model made by the P&P Chair Company in Asheboro. And what, after all, does Atticus Finch race into Miss Maudie's burning house to salvage? Her rocking chair, of course. That's all history, though. Let's get back to rocking, because rocking is what it's all about. There are millions of comfortable chairs, but a rocker has that other level. It quite literally moves you. I've gone through many rockers in my life, from the ones that I broke while resisting my mom, to the one that rotted on my porch, and the ones that my wife and I inherited from our grandmothers, which turned out to be not quite right. I've thought about it, and for me, what a rocker needs is a combination of the things that my failed rocker relationship lacked. First, as I learned from my porch rocker, it needs to comfortably rock. A good rocker should lean backward on its own. It should beckon you to, as it were, sit in its lap. When you sit, it should embrace you, not pitch you back and out. And second, it should be comfortable to hold you. It should comfortably hold you. And, all right, maybe also an infant or a compliant toddler, but usually only you. If you want motion while you canoodle, sit on a glider or a porch swing. A rocker is more of a driver's seat. There's no space for a passenger, so don't try to cram one in. Something will break. And that kind of tension is what the rocking chair is meant to avoid. Sitting down to make a shopping list? You have a kitchen table for that. Need to discuss things with the kids or your spouse? There's a living room couch, but sitting down just to sit, that's what your rocking chair is for. We think of retirees rocking on porches because relaxation, lack of obligation, is what a rocker represents. It moves back and forth, but it doesn't go anywhere. You can toss in every Southern cliche you like. Tea, liquor, shade, seersucker, and a rocker improves each one. A rocking chair is the paprika of furniture. It intensifies. The rocker must rock not so much with you as for you. You should be rocking without even knowing that you're rocking. If someone complains about a noise you're making as you sway back and forth, unaware that you're rocking, that's a good sign. If you're humming and you didn't notice, another positive. Researchers have found that rockers induce a kind of brainwaves you experience just before sleep. It may have taken us 2 millennia to figure out, but the rocker does to you what the cradle does to your baby. Not for nothing did my mom want to rock me when I was a toddler. Who was ever done with rocking their children? But as my mom learned, it's also important to make sure those children still want to be rocked. They may have reached the age of wanting to rock on their own. After our misses with our inherited rocking chairs, my wife now sets up shop in a rocker that came from an abandoned house, reupholstered and loitering in a corner of our dining room. She reads there, listens to podcasts, and is slowly, gently digging a hole in the drywall with one of the runners. I pointed it out to her once, and she looked up. "Oh," she said, "was I rocking?" "Good job, rocking chair." All right, we just have a few minutes left, so let's start in on this next section, which is broken up to in about 1 minute segments. It's entitled Best Seat in the House. The brilliant greens of our forests and valleys, the chirping of cicadas, the cool relief of our breezes, settle in on porches across the state to soak up the sights and sounds of North Carolina, one gentle rock at a time. Written by Chloe Klinkstead. This is another nice covered porch picture. There are the rockers looking out on a lake. It's lower this time than Lake Toxaway was, and a lot of treetops. The Cone Manor is where it is, in Blowing Rock. For many years, rocking chairs lined the 8-foot-wide porch of the historic 1901 Cone Manor, says Tina White, a supervisory ranger at Moses Cone Memorial Park. About 10 years ago, the rockers started to fall apart, and after discovering that the Cone family actually used wicker chairs on the porch, the National Park Service replaced the old rockers with historically accurate stationary chairs. But the community decided there was nothing quite like a rocking chair. So a local resident donated a few new ones to the manor. Now, most years from April through November, visitors can view Bass Lake and a valley of white pine, sugar maple, and apple trees from the comfort of wicker and rocking chairs. That's in Blue Ridge Parkway, BlueRidgeHeritage.com. And then we've got the Maple View Farm Country Store in Hillsboro. Since 2001, Maple View Farm Ice Cream has been a cow-to-cone operation, says manager and partner Allison Nichols Clapper. Sitting in the nearly 50 well-loved rocking chairs that line the store's country front and side porches, customers look out over the distant fields of black and white Holsteins whose milk helped create their scoops of creamy chocolate, butter pecan, and honey-toasted almond. They're on Rocky Ridge Road, MapleViewFarm.com, and they're located in Hillsboro. Pictures on this page of the farm itself, a close-up of a... it is a banana split. I do see the banana at the bottom. He's got the three scoops and all sorts of gooey stuff, and then big pile of whipped cream topped by a red cherry. And then there's a couple of kids sitting in rockers. Each one of them has a great big waffle cone in their hand. Maple View Ice Cream, known for its custom sundaes, but the classic banana split and homemade waffle cones bring smiles to Charlie and Sloan Gelazzo's face. Just like they bring in a smile to mine. The Terrace Hotel in Lake Junaluska. Rocking chairs are much part of the Terrace Hotel as the beautiful 200-acre lake it sits on. The chairs have provided a welcome respite for visitors since the hotel was built in the early 1900s. Like the original rockers, which were shorter and woven from straw-like material, the current high-back chairs are custom-made for the terrace, says Rob Huckabee, the hotel's chief operations officer and general manager. Some nights, he says, while rocking on the terrace's second and third floor balconies, the sky is so clear that you can see the Milky Way. They're on North Lakeshore Drive, lakejunaluska.com. The Carolina Hotel in Pinehurst. Like golf, rocking chairs are integral to Pinehurst Resort's identity and mission as a place where relaxation thrives. Black and white postcards from as early as 1934 show hotel guests enjoying the Carolina Hotel's veranda, leaning back in dark wooden rockers, newspapers in hand. Today, the report's signature white rockers can be found at each of its three properties, giving guests a moment of rest after playing around. Pinehurst.com. Hey, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. And I'd like you to know that the content of this magazine is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our state magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.com. We also appreciate the fact that the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, has sponsored us for over 10 years. Comments, questions, call 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.